Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 5th of April, 2024. Happy Friday. Glorious, delicious, wonderfully scented Friday. We all need it. I know I do. I hope you're going to have some good times this weekend. Lots of stuff to get to, man. I'm already feeling a couple of hate crimes coming on for the weekend. Effing review tonight. Patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Check it out. Fired up. Ready to go. Hangry might be the way to describe it. You don't want to miss it. $5 a month gets you all sorts of stuff. And don't forget, while you're there, enter the contest to win the autographed book this week from Governor Ron DeSantis. Thanks for the support. It's really the only way to show support for the program. So appreciate it. All right, let us get started so the weekend can do the same. A bunch, every single day, there's just a bunch of stuff going on. The left is relentless with the stupid, with the ridiculous, with the absurd, with the assaults on us. Normal people who just simply want to be left alone. I was on a conference call yesterday, and I proposed, and I'm going to have to sort of work this out because it needs to be developed into a column. It needs to get legs beyond that column as well. We just had the trans day of visibility. And who's sitting there going, you know what we need is we need to visibly see more trans people. Or more. How about heterosexual people making out day? Would anybody support that? To hear the left talk about it, that's every single day. And nobody wants to see that either. Nobody wants to see anything. Nobody cares about your sex life unless they're involved in it. And most people don't want to be. I hate to break it to everybody, but they don't want to be. So to sit there on the trans day of visibility, how about a day of just leaving everybody the hell alone? Actually, it should probably be a month because I'm not sure a day is enough or even a week is enough. And since you can just declare things to be, have you seen the person who created the trans day of visibility? It's being referred to as a holiday. It's not a holiday. It's just somebody declared it to be, and so it is. Like, there's no act of Congress declaring nobody's taking the day off because it's Trans Visibility Day or whatever. That's absurd. It's not a holiday, but they treat it as such. And they go, oh, it's that, and they mark it every year. It's amazing how they miss other things. They skip other things. But if we had it like a day of just, I don't know, keep it to yourself. A month of, it's leave everybody the hell alone month. It's we don't give a damn about your sex life month. It's stop going into kindergarten classes and telling everybody what you and your thruple did over the weekend. I'll develop it further. But you want to know what's making me mad? What's sticking in my craw? That's it. Maybe that's a preview of the cursing show. But there's a lot of other things going on that are in the political realm that are ridiculous, that are stupid. I want to start off with Morning Joe. This is obviously Thursday, because I'm talking to you. And that's the anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination by James Earl Ray. The left gets aroused. They love it. They get excited. They come in. The thing about Martin Luther King is you live long enough, you say everything you can find. He's everything to all people. You can find whatever you want to be and to justify what you're doing, as evidenced by the View the other day or last week when they had that Coleman Hughes on talking about a colorblind society, and Sonny Houston is like, no, we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't. But Martin Luther King said, make sure you recognize everybody's color, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, maybe, but not in the context and the way you're talking. But whatever. He has become a weapon, which is kind of ironic for somebody who is known for their nonviolence. But he is a weapon for the Democratic Party. He's a tool for the Democratic Party, and so much of his family is fine with that. I can't really blame them. It's a little tacky, I think, but, you know, their father was taken from them when they were exceedingly young. They probably have no real memories of him. And they weren't exactly rich at the time, so when he was assassinated, like, it'd blow financially to the family and everything. I understand all of that, but at some point, you do have to stop dining out on your family name and maybe do something yourself. I guess technically being, you know, a tool of the Democratic Party is doing something. It pays well, not really a super productive member of society, but whatever. But anyway, that has given that insulation that, well, all of his children are Democrats, has given the Democrats cover to wrap themselves in MLK every chance they get, every time they want, because that's what they do, that's who they are. And then they can use it as a weapon as well. The Republicans aren't MLK. We're MLK. We're Dr. King. And, okay, Doctor of, you always notice this Reverend Martin Luther King. And, no, doctor. He's a doctor of theology. Okay, what's his doctorate in theology? Maybe he liked being called doctor. Maybe he was insecure like Jill. But I think that he might have been prouder of being a reverend. I don't know them. I didn't know the man. Obviously, he was murdered long before I was born, but it just strikes me as if you are truly a man of God, you would be more interested in that part of your education, that part of your title. But the left doesn't want people to really think about, well, he's a religious guy, because they've demonized religion, except for climate change. So they call him Dr. King. Dr. King. Dr. King. Well, this morning, trans Harry Potter over there at Morning Joe decided that he was going to, because everything revolves around Donald Trump. Everything is part of Donald Trump. And again, I just want to remind you that if Donald Trump is, because Joe sits there and goes, ugh, Donald Trump is doing everything he can to undo everything that Martin Luther King did. First of all, with all due respect to Martin Luther King, and all due respect to everybody, nothing anybody did is undoable. Nothing is beyond criticism. Nobody is beyond criticism. Nobody in the history of the United States is above having their work questioned and, when appropriate, overturned if they achieved something with it. That's part of striving to become a more perfect union. So I'm sorry, Martin Luther King advocated for a whole lot of socialistic policies that have proven to be disastrous around the world and even here in the United States where they have been tried. So, yeah, it's not just, well, we shouldn't be doing this program. Well, Martin Luther King said that it was good. Oh, all right, then, never mind. I didn't know that. Forgive me, I'll slink back into my corner. No, that's not how it is. He was a man. Just a human being, just like the rest of us. And he did some extraordinary things, but he was also wrong. He was also capable of being wrong. And don't even get me started about his marriage. You know, hold him up as a bastion of virtue and of morality. Those words have meaning. And I'm not sure they apply. But that doesn't, to me, change the words he did say that were good, the actions he did do that were good and necessary and standing up to the Democratic Party. It's weird. Democrats beat the crap out of him most of his adult life, and now the Democrats claim the mantle of Martin Luther King. They opposed him every step of the way, and then they said, oh, it's more politically advantageous to go the other way. All right, we are now totally true believers. And now they've gone back full circle to being segregationists, just for different reasons. And they claim the mantle of Martin Luther King. Okay, whatever. Anyway, trans Harry Potter says that Donald Trump wants to reverse everything Martin Luther King is doing. And then he rolls in, since they can't just have a conversation over there on Morning Joe. It's a lot like a dare, a bet. It is like watching somebody, all right, you need to, it's like a Mad Lib. You need to work in X, Y, and Z into every conversation, or else the game is over, or whatever. You all die, whatever it is. It's like an escape room thing. If you don't say Donald Trump and if you don't attack RFK every once in a while, then it's a problem. So trans Harry Potter rolls an attack on Donald Trump into an attack on Robert Kennedy. And what's hilarious is that Joe Scarborough here is essentially acting as though he is the defender of the Kennedy name, the defender of the Kennedy mantle, and as if he is somehow the arbiter of what is and isn't truly Kennedy. Like, you got the infidelity down, I guess, but there's other parts of it. I don't think that Joe Scarborough is more of an authority on what the Kennedy name means than somebody with the Kennedy name. Call me old-fashioned. Call me crazy. So look for those two things as we get into this.
You know, Mike Barnicle, it is just a side note here on how much has changed and how Donald Trump has worked to reverse so many of the gains made since Martin Luther King's passing. We showed that extraordinary clip of Bobby Kennedy, and here we are 56 years later, a guy we both know, Bobby Kennedy Jr., running, you know, as basically cover for Donald Trump. It's not a coincidence that some of Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s biggest contributors are Donald Trump's biggest contributors. So here we are all these years later, and just this twisted path has led us to where somebody named Kennedy is putting himself in a position to elect Donald Trump president, a guy whose life now is dedicated to reversing the work of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy.
I just love it. It's dedicated to just Donald Trump. I remember that big speech that Donald Trump gave where he's like, I will not rest until I overturn everything that Martin Luther King ever stood for. We must destroy the legacy of that man. Oh, wait, no, that didn't happen. Notice how what's missing from Joe, what Joe is saying there, is what's missing from everything that the left does and everything, every declarative statement they make. Is any proof or any real explanation of what the hell they're talking about. It's just, he's trying to overturn the legacy and everything about Martin Luther King. Apparently the campaign's going to have an event where they go to Martin Luther King's resting place and urinate right there on the grave. Got any proof of that? No. Can you give any examples of what Donald Trump is doing to destroy or overturn the legacy of Martin Luther King? He's Donald Trump. Don't you understand how that is? No, I'm asking for an example. One, two. I mean, I'll take one. But it seems as though if this guy is working tirelessly to overturn everything the guy ever did, you ought to be able to give a couple of examples, but I'll take just one. And he doesn't offer one. He can't offer one. They don't offer one. They're never asked. Nobody in this little... Nobody on camera would dare say, yeah, Joe, I'm a big Trump hater as anybody, but I don't know what you're talking about here with this overturn the legacy of Martin Luther King. Maybe you can clarify. I'll cede you my time so that you can clarify about what it is that Donald Trump is doing, because I'm ready. I believe that he's evil, and I'm down with the cause and whatever, but I'm just unfamiliar with this particular thing. But nobody does it. Nobody questions it. You're not allowed to. You'd probably be your last time on Morning Joe if you ever said to Joe, you know what, Joe, I don't have to answer for your question. I have a question for you, though. I'd really love to know what in the hell you're talking about. Can you give me an example? Just imagine that. But I love that now we've got RFK's a friend of ours. He's a this, he's a that, he's the other thing, and they're all trying to kill everybody and blah, blah, blah. And like, wait a second. You and Mika, Joe, were friends with Donald Trump for like 30 years, right? You were members of Mar-a-Lago. You palled around with him. I think you went to his wedding, or he went to yours. Or, like, you are intertwined with this guy. If he's been a horrible racist, lying in wait, just buying his time, going, oh, man, someday I will have the opportunity to pounce and destroy the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. That's what I'm waiting for. If only I could do that now. If that's the case, then why the hell were you friends with him for so long? I don't know what it costs to be a member of Mar-a-Lago, but I can't imagine it's very little, right? Seems like a pretty luxurious place, nice place, lots of nice amenities and what have you, the greatest place on earth, whatever they say. Seems like that you have to cough up a couple of bucks for that one. They did. Why would they do that? Why would you hang out for 30 years with a racist? Why would you consider yourself a racist? Why would in 2016 you give hours and hours and hours of your television program over to an unrepentant racist working tirelessly to strip Martin Luther King and everything he did from the face of the earth? Why would you do that, Joe? Of course, it's all a lie. I just illustrate this with absurdity to illustrate the absurdity of this. This is how the left operates. They simply declare it to be. Everybody on the panel is like, literally, like a bunch of bobbing heads going, oh, yeah, no, absolutely. You preach, brother, preach. No one thought for a second that maybe we should back this up a little bit. And I can tell you, the best indicator that they can't back it up is that they did, that they didn't, that they don't, that they never do. Why? Because if there was a case to be made, simply, and I get it, it's lazy, it's easy, you just declare something to be, and then poof, it's like you're all going to Hogwarts with trans Harry Potter there, and you just declare something to be, and then everybody's got it, or it is, or whatever. It's really easy to do that, but you want to try and convince some muggles to your cause. And as such, you should make a case, right? If you've got this compelling evidence that Donald Trump is just a Klansman in waiting, present it. Whenever they do talk about such things, the only thing they really ever cite is, well, his language. He says mean things. How does he say mean things? It doesn't matter. If he says such mean things, then why do they lie about the things that he says, like animals or bloodbath or anything like that, or the very fine people on both sides? That's one of the biggest political lies perhaps ever, and they still say it to this day. Maybe Joe Biden is just so insane he doesn't know, but it is a total and complete lie. A total and complete lie. That's the reason they show you 7-second clips rather than the whole thing. If a 7-second clip makes your case, wouldn't a 20-second clip make your case better? Wouldn't context, wouldn't, if you just throw it out there? Nope. It doesn't. They simply don't want you to know the context. What you should want to know from every politician is what they don't want you to know. And the people on Morning Joe are politicians, not just the ones who are former politicians, but every single one of them are politicians in their own way. You should be asking them basic questions. Back it up. Tell me what's going on. What is it? That they can't or they won't tells you everything. It's not just laziness. They'll cite, well, Donald Trump's rhetoric is mean about black people. How? Well, it just is. Okay. Well, the Central Park jogger, that's one thing they go back to. He called for he called people who were accused of raping this woman, brutalizing this woman, they called them monsters. Well, yeah, so did a whole hell of a lot of people, because the story is pretty damn monstrous, okay? That it wasn't them is really inconsequential, because everybody thought it was them at the time. And now it's kind of funny to see all of these people whose job it is seemingly to immediately declare themselves experts on whatever the subject is, be imbued with some power to know every fact of a story, and then immediately declare, here's what happened, here's who's to blame, this is the worst, he's the worst, blah, 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 blah. Donald Trump's guilty, he hasn't been accused yet, doesn't matter, he's an insurrectionist, and then go, he was not super down with the due process rights of the Central Park Five or whatever the hell they were. Okay. Who was? Aside from their defense lawyer, This is back in the 80s. I don't really have any memories of this. I have vague memories of this, but it's more one of those things that you've heard repeated so many times since then that you can't remember, or you don't know if you really remember it, or because I didn't grow up in New York. Why would I remember this? But I don't think there were that many people sounding the alarm going, hey, wait a second now. Let's not jump to conclusions. That's never really been how media operates. They jump into the pool and then they worry about whether or not there's water in it. But they always throw the word alleged in there. Because then you can't, then you got your butt covered. And like, well, allegedly, this person allegedly murdered. Here's video of this person allegedly murdering this other person. Wait a minute, we got it on video. Now the lawyers say we got to say allegedly. But they imply the hell out of it. They're right there. They're not, they don't remind anybody except for, like, I remember my friend Bill in high school would watch Cops. You couldn't escape Cops. It was everywhere. And at the beginning, like, all subjects are innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. And my friend Bill was like, looks at me one day and says, yeah. You just know the guy wants to say, yeah, right, at the end of it. Because that's just how it is. Yes, there are some people who are innocent, genuinely innocent, who are accused of crimes, and then you find out later they didn't do it. But for the most part, the most people who are accused did it. Whether or not you can prove it in a court of law or convince a jury or beat jury nullification, that's another story. But most people, OJ, nobody goes, well, I just didn't see it. I don't know. There's all these people saying they did it, but I just didn't. I looked at the evidence. I watched the trial. I thought Judge Ito was really fair and everything. It's thorough, but I just didn't think they made their case. There's a huge doubt there. Really? Nobody said that. There's a whole bunch of, I didn't care that he did it. That was mostly on the jury, but that's besides, most people didn't go, I'm not, I was unconvinced. Unless you were last name Simpson. I think even his lawyers were like, damn, we just got a murderer off. We just got a guy cut two heads off, and we just, he's going to be golfing at the club this weekend. Like, damn, what did we do? That I think is more common. But you just watch these people on the left, and they declare Donald Trump, he's a monster. How? Did he rampage through Tokyo, knock over buildings? Did he spit fire? Is he working hand in hand with Godzilla to protect us from bigger threats? Like, what? How is he a monster? What does he do? Does he reside on Monster Island? Is, like, Mar-a-Lago 2 out on Monster Island? Is Mothra his manager out there? Like, what the hell? They don't have to back it up. They can just declare it. And the RFK thing is even more hilarious because you've got Scarborough sitting there going, tarnishing the Kennedy legacy. Can you believe this? He's doing it. Yeah, nobody knows the Kennedy legacy more than a D-bag who grew up in Florida, right? Nobody knows that better. Certainly not Robert Francis Kennedy Jr. What kind of connection does he have to the Kennedy family? It's just a shining example of just how far the left will go and how worried they are. Now, I'm going to talk, I guess I'll talk in a second. I want to think about this for a second, but it's an indication of how worried they are this far away. Under normal circumstances, this far away from an election, they shouldn't be worried. There's something else going on. I don't know what it, I think they really are worried that Joe Biden's going to have a meltdown, because while the polling is favorable to Donald Trump right now, most of it's within the margin of error, and we're months and months away. Lots of things can change, but Democrats are terrified of something. So I want to talk for a second about what might have the left upset, what might have the left beside themselves, because they are in panic mode pretty early. The polling data is certainly not good for Democrats. You never want to be polling behind anybody, but if you have to be polling behind somebody 6 months, 8 months, whatever it is, 7 months before an election is when you want to do it. Now, it gives you plenty of time to figure it out, what the problem is, and try and reverse course. That being said, you have to have a message that is going to attract people, that you're relatively confident will attract people. I don't think the Democrats have that. You have to have a candidate that can overcome this and become something that inspires people, someone that inspires people. That is not Joe Biden in any way, shape, or form. So you begin to see why Democrats are panicking. Plus, you just essentially have a bipedal time bomb in good old Joe. Every time you put him out there, there's a possibility that he's going to say something. You cannot keep him drugged up the whole time. You'd want to, but you can't. Sooner or later, he's 81 or 82 or whatever the hell he is. He's older than dirt. You cannot have that guy that age on Adderall constantly. You've got to pump the brakes or at least take your foot off the gas. And so that leaves them, and you can't just hide him in the basement. You can hide him in the basement a lot, but you can't just hide him in the basement. It is not 2020 anymore. The Democrats are going to run a lot on, look at what we did. We took care of COVID. We inherited a mess, COVID, 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 and now no COVID. We've done it. So they can't then go back to the basement. They can give Joe COVID at some point. They can not give it to him like they're going to infect him, but they can pretend he has it at some point or he's been exposed. And so he's going to have to, you know, lay low for a little bit. They can do that sort of gamesmanship just because they don't want to get people sick. They can seem compassionate, but they can't lock him in the basement and put him on a Zoom call with Dylan Mulvaney and that be the crux of their campaign. The American public at some point will require proof of life. Beyond a screen, you know, they're terrified of it because every time he goes out there and he's not doped up. Yesterday, the president was late for a meeting, more than an hour late. Now, the public event was in the White House, so the commute was down a flight of stairs. Or actually, they probably don't let him walk down the stairs. The commute was down an elevator, which makes it even easier. So that he was late was problematic. That he was late with a CPAP imprint on his face was even bigger problem. Because the event was not at, you know, 6 a.m. The event was at noon. The event was supposed to be at 11, but the event was at noon. And he shows up and he looks like he just woke up. So you sit there and you go, what the hell is going on? He's supposed to be delivering marks for, according to his daily schedule, 11 a.m., the president delivers remarks on lowering health care costs for Americans. Bernie was there. Bernie Sanders, I think, is older than Joe Biden. And Bernie Sanders, honestly, he has more energy than Joe Biden does. That's why you see Democrats concerned about polling. Bernie Sanders is 82. And Joe Biden, I think he's still 81. Yeah, he's still 81 till November. By the way, the president's schedule for Thursday, April 4th, here it is in its entirety. I hope you can keep up. Imagine if you, do you think you could handle this schedule at age 81, at age 21? That's what they say. Just watch me. Just watch me. And then he runs and hides. Like, we can't watch you. You're not doing public events. You're not interacting with any real journalists. You're doing interviews with actors on their podcasts. You're doing scripted things with ESPN. Just watch me. Well, your opportunity is to watch him today. 10 a.m., the president receives the presidential daily brief. 1:30 p.m., oh, wait, no, that's the press briefing. This is why this is on the president's schedule of events. I don't know, but that's literally on the president's public schedule. I assume they are putting it there. So the president's alleged receiving of the presidential daily brief doesn't look like the only thing the guy did all day. They had to put something else out there. He's not even having lunch with anybody today. He's just probably going to sit there and eat a pastrami on rye by himself. watch Matlock. And then at 5 p.m., the president hosts a reception celebrating Greek Independence Day. Hmm. Okay. Well, there you go. That's in the East Room. Pre-credentialed media and pooled for TV. You had to RSVP by 10 a.m. if you wanted to attend, if you are in the press. If you're a normal human being, you won't get within a country mile of the President of the United States. And if you plan on asking him a question, you will be escorted from the premises immediately, unless maybe you submit that question for pre-screening. You want to see why Democrats are so concerned about polls for an election that is so far away? That is why. They have no confidence in him. Well, that's not true. They have as much confidence in him as we do. So when you look at the polling data, Donald Trump is ahead in every swing state. And that's got Democrats a little concerned. The Reverend Dr. Jill was on TV the other day going, no, we're going to win. We're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing the other thing. Look, people were trying to make hay out of that on cable going, well, does she know something we don't? Is this about cheating? Is it? No. What is she supposed to do? Is she going to go out there and go, yeah, no, we're screwed. We ain't going to win. We ain't even going to come close to winning right now. I've already started packing. That's not how campaigns work. If people are polling 20 points down, they go, I really feel the momentum is shifting behind us and we're doing this, that, and the other thing. So that Jill was like saying, "There, no, that's not, we're going to win," is not an indication that they're going to cheat. That they're Democrats is an indication that they're going to cheat. But that her saying that is what you have to do. They'd never let the First Lady out. Imagine the First Lady going out there, you know, we're screwed. We're not going to win. We're not going to win. And moreover, I don't want to win. But Donald Trump is ahead in every, except for one where they're tied, swing state. Michigan, up by 5 in a four-way race with 45%. To Biden's 40%. Pennsylvania, Trump up by 4 in a four-way, these are four-way races, with Jill Stein and the Libertarian candidate. This doesn't even consider Bobby Kennedy Jr., who, thanks to really bad conservative media, is drawing votes away from Donald Trump. Nevada, Trump is up by 4. He's only got 42% to Biden's 38%. North Carolina, Trump up by 7, 45 to 38. Arizona, Trump up by 6. Georgia, Trump up by 4. Wisconsin, Trump up by 1. Now, in just head-to-head competition, Trump is still ahead in all of those states except Wisconsin, where it is tied 46 to 46. I want to look at these numbers and give you reasons to be hopeful and reasons to be concerned. Why would you do that? Well, because if you just want smoke blown up your rear end, there's plenty of outlets for that. There are plenty of people in conservative media who will just tell you, this is over. Donald Trump, we're shaping up to have a blowout. Blah. No. First of all, never underestimate the ability of Republicans, no matter who that Republican is, to screw things up. Secondly, never underestimate the ability of Democrats to cheat. If you're within a point or two, you really got to be on guard. Because the Democrats will snatch that right out from under you. But the real reason to sit there and have a little bit concern, now it's early again, and the only reason I would raise levels of concern is for the express purpose of trying to right the ship. Hopefully people will work a little bit harder. Hopefully people will not coast. It's really easy, especially when you are having all that smoke blown up your rear end, that people will go, well, we've got this. They go into the prevent defense. There are more football games lost when the coaches go, all right, we're up by 2. There's only 5 minutes left. 2 touchdowns. There's only 5 minutes left. Just don't give up anything. Don't get aggressive. Don't try. And they're like, okay, you're playing a prevent defense. And what happens? They go, everybody's afraid. Don't get any penalties. Don't do any. Don't let them get 10 yards. Well, they'll take 9. Then they'll take 9 again. They'll take. And then they'll break one because then you'll finally go, well, we should probably stop them from taking 9. And you end up losing the game or it coming a hell of a lot closer to losing the game than it otherwise would have. You got to fight like you're behind all the time. Until you break the tape at the finish line, you are not finished. It's called the finish line for a reason. Checkpoints aren't called finish lines. But a reason to be concerned is that in none of these states, in the two-way races, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Nevada, North Carolina, Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin, none of them is Donald Trump above 50%. Not one. He's ahead in all of them but Wisconsin, where he's tied. But he is within the margin of error. I believe the margin of error is four points. So he's within the margin of error in all but North Carolina and Arizona. So there is much more work to be done. You're not going to probably break off, you maybe break a point off from Joe Biden in these states. Maybe two if you work really, really hard. You make a concerted effort. But that's not where you should be expending your calories. You should be expending your calories on the people who are not listed in this poll. When you do the two-way race in Michigan, you got 48 for Trump and 45 for Biden. That leaves 7% of the population out there who are going to decide this race in Michigan. Granted, some of that 7% are the people who like go, I can't vote for Joe Biden. He's not anti-Israeli enough or whatever. And they will, some of them come home when the chips are down. The people in Dearborn, the people in Hamtramck, they will come home. The Rashida Tlaib is going, vote non-committed, non-committed. And they did. They got 20% of the people to vote non-committed, and yay, that's all good. But it's meaningless because you know by the time that the general election comes around, Rashida Tlaib is not going to tell you to go and vote for Jill Stein, who hates Israel, and the Green Party ticket. She's going to tell you, you got to come home, you got to vote for Joe Biden because Donald Trump is Hitler somehow. Which is weird because, you know, if you don't really like Israel, you're probably a fan of Hitler. Just saying. But, you know, in Pennsylvania, it's 47 to 44. That leaves 9% out there undecided. You've got the president has to go out. Republicans have to go out and chip away at those people. Forget what Joe Biden has. Don't try and take away what Joe Biden has. Try and take what nobody has. Speak to those disaffected Democrats, not the ones who hate Israel. You're not going to win them. And if you did, you'd end up losing more than you'd gain. But there are a lot of people, if you look at the polling, and you see the issues people care about. It's very misleading. And polls, the media treats polls as if they are the Rosetta Stone. They are the key to everything out there. You look at these polls. Let's look at the polling issues. Let's look at approval ratings. And you go, oh, people are not approving of this, or people are approving of that, or people, this is the number one issue is this, the number one issue is that. These are questions that are so vaguely worded and so lazily written. Most of the polling done today is not done, at least the public polling data. I assume campaigns are doing a better job. God, I hope campaigns are doing a better job of this. Otherwise, hire me and I'll do your polling for you. Most polling that you hear about is done expressly for the purpose of getting publicity, getting news stories, getting clicks for the poll. That's just how it works. They want PR. They want this. They want that. They want the other thing. So you sit somebody, you talk to somebody and you go, what is the number one issue that you care about? Why, it's the economy. Okay, great. Thank you. That's it. But if you don't go beyond that, you've got a bit of pretty worthless data. What do you mean? What is it about the economy? You could be talking to somebody who thinks that Joe Biden's the greatest president in the history of the world, and the economy is doing great. Somebody who believes the Democrat spin, or somebody who, maybe they're a government bureaucrat. They've got this, and they go, oh, this is wonderful. The economy is doing great. They're a government employee. There are people out there who think that the economy is doing great, and they all, not all of them have shows on MSNBC and our late-night comics. there are people, there are always people, no matter how bad the economy, who are doing well in that economy. So if they give an answer, during the Great Depression, they had 20% unemployment, horrible, you know, hunger and fear. And I mean, there were some people who did just all right. They did absolutely fine. So if you poll them, you know, there's some people who think that the economy's great. So if you don't know what they mean by the economy is the number one issue, you have a piece of useless data. But everybody just projects on it. You say, well, I see 25% saying the economy is their top issue. You think, well, those people recognize that Joe Biden's economy sucks. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. So let's get into these numbers a little bit more, just because I want everybody to be aware of what's going on. I want everybody to be aware of what the issues are and how the Democrats view that they can win. They're not going to try and make the case for Joe Biden. They can't. They're going to have to pay lip service to it. They can't just be Debbie Downers about the economy. They can't sit around and go, well, sorry about that, but don't worry, we'll do better than the second term. I don't know that anybody, maybe there's some politician out there who ran around going, wow, I really screwed up the first time, but I got this now. Now I know what the hell I'm talking about, or I won't be as bad the next time around. Not sure that's a winning strategy. It would probably be, for most of them, an honest strategy, but I'm not sure it would be a winning strategy. And I think most politicians would like to win rather than be honest, hence the reason that none of them are honest. So it's just, I crack myself up. So when you look at these numbers, Donald Trump is not above 50% in any of these states. You have to, and I know I sound like a Debbie Downer when I do this, but I have to remind people that the amount of appreciation somebody has or people have or supporters have for a candidate does not translate into anything other than those people showing up to vote, right? That's great. You want your people, you need your people to show up to vote. But if you absolutely love somebody, your vote still counts only once. Versus somebody who loathes that person, but hates the other person more, or recognizes that even though I don't like this SOB, they're certainly better than the alternative. That vote counts just once too. And this is a quantity game, not a quality game. Quality can play a factor in who shows up. You can get your base to show up if they love you. You can get your base to work for you, which I hope everybody does, if they really like the candidate, whoever the candidate is, whatever the candidate for office, whatever the office is. But votes only count once. We're not Democrats. We haven't figured out the way to make them count multiple times or even get the zombie vote. So you have to recognize that fact, that if you don't be Pauline Kael, you don't be, everybody I know is voting for candidate X. I don't know what's going on. I can coast now. I can relax. No, you cannot. That's not the way the world works. It's not the way politics works. Democrats will cheat. There is no other reason on earth to not support voter ID. Not only to not support voter ID, you can be indifferent towards it. I don't really care. But to vehemently oppose it. There is no other reason. The left insists, well, voter fraud is never, there are convictions, every election cycle there are convictions of people, guilty pleas from people for committing election fraud. Maybe not in the presidential election, a lot of times it's in local elections. Local elections have been recently overturned because of voter fraud. Second elections have been forced to be held because of voter fraud, because of cheating, usually by Democrats, by the way. So it happens quite a bit for something that never happens. And you sit there, and it's a lot cheaper when it's a city council race in a town of 5,000 people. Right? When the leading candidate gets 600 votes and the second candidate gets 578 votes. It's really easy to do that kind of fraud. But on a larger scale, it's easier. Why? Because you can look at the voter rolls and you go, all right, well, this is a particularly low voter turnout area. And it's weird how these historically low voter turnout areas are always in Democrat strongholds, right? Philadelphia, for example. Let's just look at the city of brotherly love. Philadelphia, not a lot to get excited about there in Philadelphia. You have to traverse a slalom course of junkies and homeless people to try and get to the polling place. Not a lot of people want to do that every couple of years. And they recognize that no matter who they vote for, it's going to be a Democrat and things are just going to continue to get worse. So there's a lot of disaffected people. So if you got people who haven't, let's just say, I'll make up a name. I'm thinking of baseball players. Monty Irvin. Monty Irvin hasn't voted in 10 years. Why? Because Monty Irvin doesn't see a dime's worth of difference between any of the candidates he has to choose from. No matter what happens, it's going to be a Democrat. And so what's the point? And it's usually a foregone conclusion which Democrat it is. So you just go la-di-da and move along. You don't go vote. Well, you get used to not voting. You can easily get used to not voting. So it becomes a habit, just like voting can be a habit. So you don't show up anymore, and you don't show up for 5 election cycles, 10 years, and people notice that. And they go, oh, Monty Irvin hasn't shown up for 10 years. But Monty Irvin is still alive. The odds of Monty Irvin showing up for this election are next to nothing, because why would this one be any different than all the others? So we can vote somebody on behalf of Monty Irvin, and the odds of Monty showing up are pretty slim, especially if you say, all right, we're going to wait until 5 o'clock to vote for Monty Irvin. Then we'll send somebody in to vote for Monty. So that'll give Monty from polls opening up at 8 until 5 o'clock to show up. And if he hasn't shown up by then, he's probably not going to show up. And so we can just go on with that. It'll be great. Then you know which way Monty is going to vote, because you get to vote for Monty. Now, it's not any good if you just do it for one person. They do it for multiple people. And you can get a caravan of people. You can get a lot of people into a van. You can get 10, 15 people in one of those minibuses, one of those party buses. And you spend all afternoon going from polling place to polling place where thousands of people are registered to vote, and you know which ones never show up. And you can go and vote on their behalf. Vote in their name. That can't overcome a tidal wave. That can't overcome a landslide. But that can easily overcome a squeaker. The amount of cheating. Hugh Hewitt, I believe, wrote a book about how Republicans need to win by enough votes that Democrats can't cheat it. Like by 2-3%. You have to win by more than they can cheat to take. And it's true. So as you look at these polling data, it's great. It's certainly all the indicators right now are good for Donald Trump and for down ballot races. But that's if the election were held today. But if the election were held today, everybody would be shocked, because today is not election day. This is mile 9, 10 in a marathon. And it only gets steeper uphill from here. You have to recognize Donald Trump is going against the powers of incumbency, the powers of the media, and you've got Morning Joe every day sitting there saying that Donald Trump basically didn't pull the trigger, but he funded and inspired James Earl Ray, even though Donald Trump was probably a teenager at the time. So you have to factor all that in. Now, thankfully, there is a lot of the boy who cried wolf in the media. You can only call somebody Hitler so many times before people begin to think, okay, he's not really Hitler. You can only call January 6th a massive insurrection, the darkest day in all of American history, perhaps world history, the threats to democracy. Oh, my God, it's an insurrection. And then you go, wait, it lasted like 3 hours. And Most people were peaceful and left when they were told to leave and were let in, actually, on the Senate side by Capitol Police. Maybe this isn't a bill. Watch. If there's a violent insurrection, why are they staying within the velvet ropes in the rotunda? Isn't that just weird? Isn't that, was the storming of the Bastille just a not, may we come in, please? No? Well, I disagree. And then they picked the lock and calmly went. No, they ripped the Bastille apart. In the United States Capitol, we were told that there was some feces smeared on one of the walls. Still, not that I've really spent a lot of time searching that, just because I don't want to know what Google will give me in response to a search I could come up with for that. But you would think that there would be pictures of that. You'd think that that was the biggest destruction, aside from glass, that there would be pictures of that. But they don't. They don't even have, you know, they say, well, Brian Sicknick was killed. No, Brian Sicknick died the next day of a stroke. But he was not killed there. He was not beaten to death. He actually said he was feeling fine at the end of the day. And the other officers who they say died as a result of January 6th killed themselves months later. Which, if you're haunted by that, here's a good thought experiment out there for any enterprising young journalists. We're told that two Capitol Police officers killed themselves as a direct result of January the 6th. The horrors that they've, and I'm not trying to belittle it, I'm sure it was an unpleasant day, but it certainly wasn't bamboo shoots under the fingernails and a nonstop beating. It was 3 hours of fighting. Not good. But if two of them killed themselves months later, and they're responsible, directly tied because of that, should there not be a rash of police officer suicides from the summer of the BLM Antifa riots? If the job was so horrible for 3 hours that you had to fight somebody on occasion outside the Capitol, that 2 months later caused you to take your own life and nothing else, everything else was fine in life except for that day, then wouldn't say the relentless, let's just take Portland, where they surrounded a courthouse, they had to barricade it for months, and every night the mutant army would show up, throw bricks, Molotov cocktails, green lasers, trying to blind people, screaming, yelling, launching fireworks at them, trying to kill these police officers, literally trying to kill these police officers, not trying to get past, not whatever. Wouldn't there be some sort of correlating self-harm or suicide numbers in that as well? I'm asking for a friend. I don't know the number. I don't know the reality of it. But it just strikes me as a rational thinking human being that one would think that if police officers that work at the United States Capitol, two of them, out of a smallish pool of Capitol Police, were driven to suicide over 3 hours, what would 3 months do to somebody? I haven't heard about a rash of suicide attempts up in the Portland area, up in really anywhere. What about where St. George Floyd was canonized? Wouldn't that be the same thing? Where people are literally on the streets screaming at cops, threatening police, trying to kill police. Would that not be something that would lead to mental distress? That would cause, if we're to believe one, then shouldn't we believe the other? Because we're told we have to believe the one. The one is so obvious, and the one is so important, and it's crucial that we not only believe, but we repeat this, that we believe it, that it's true, that we let people know, raise awareness, etc., etc. And you go, okay, then is there a concerted effort by these concerned trolls in the liberal media for the police officers from the BLM Antifa riots? Because they faced a hell of a lot worse. And they face it for a hell of a lot longer. What are the results? That we don't know tells us everything we need to know. oftentimes that's the case. Whatever happened to you hear a story of a hate crime being committed and, you know, there's no follow-up there? Why was there no follow-up? That we don't know tells you everything you need to know. Then there's no follow-up there because the whole thing was a load of crap. It was a hoax. It was a whatever. The guy spray-painted his own car. The student put the note on their dormitory door themselves, whatever it is. And that just goes away. It's not important. The resolution is not important if the resolution is not favorable to the left. The resolution is wildly important, and the entire process, in fact, is wildly important, should it be useful to the left. Nex Benedict, the non-binary student who was beaten to death by bullies who refused to accept that God made a mistake when he created this woman. That was the story. It was all the horrible things. She died from her injury. She was beaten to death. Oh, no, wait. She committed suicide. Oh, wait. She was the aggressor in the fight. Oh, wait. She may well have been molested by a family member. Oh, wait. You indulged her mental illness, and then she ended up ending her own life because you didn't get her any help. No, wait a second. You notice the beginning of that story, you couldn't avoid it. It was all over the news. The resolution of that story, you have to dig through a lot of the origin stories to find out what actually happened. And while the origin story was screamed into a microphone, the resolution was sort of yawned into print. It's weird. Those panels on MSNBC that were convened to memorialize and draw attention to the hate that should never happen again, that killed Nex Benedict, were not reconvened to talk about the problems of suicide amongst people suffering from gender dysphoria, which is a real thing. Because if you indulge people, the problems that caused whatever it is they need to be indulged in the first place don't go away just because you indulge them. Many times, they get worse. The left cannot handle that. They cannot accept that because they cannot weaponize it. They cannot use it to mobilize. It serves them no good. So it might as well not exist. But before I get into the trans and suicide stuff that I was going to talk about, I want to quickly... I forgot that I was, this is the problem. My mouth goes and my mind wanders, and they're not always going in the same direction. I forgot about the point I wanted to make about polling really quickly is that if, you sit there and you go, you do the polling, oh, people care about the economy. Okay, well, that doesn't really tell you much. It doesn't tell you much. Okay, you care about the economy. Well, because you think the economy sucks or because you think the economy's good? That's important, but if you just say the economy, you don't know which way that person's going. If you, in a lot of polls, of course, the economy is right up there, but the border, immigration is right up there too, as far as the big issues, and Republicans are getting very excited about that, and they probably should. But you can't for sure know, because there are a lot of open border Democrats out there. There are a lot of people who just go, yeah, I think it's a good thing. I welcome all these people coming flooding across the border. I don't care. Lake and Riley probably had it coming. Shouldn't have been jogging out there anyway. But it doesn't matter. I care about getting as many people as sweet. They're better than us anyway. They want open borders. So if you say what's the most important issue to you, and the answer is immigration, that doesn't tell you anything. Unless you ask, how so? What do you mean? And you get into that. So as you hear these things in the news, recognize that there are a lot of questions that aren't asked. And the fewer questions that aren't asked, the more worthless the data is. Just keep that in mind, because I don't want people getting too excited, and I certainly never want anybody to get complacent. Even if Republicans manage to win come November, you don't sit back and rest on your laurels. Right now, the President of the United States is changing regulations to make it more difficult, if not completely impossible, but make it more difficult for any future president. They're planning, they're fearing, they're putting safeguards, quote, in place for a Trump second term, to fire bureaucrats. To fire bureaucrats who refuse to follow the directions of the President of the United States. Now, the President of the United States is the head of the executive branch. If people in the executive branch are insubordinate, saying, hey, we need to implement this policy, and they go, we're not going to do that, I'm not interested. The Biden administration is moving to protect people from firing, people who do that. They're also putting people in those positions to do just that. If you remember, and there's no reason for you to remember, but at the end of the Obama administration made, and this was before Trump won, this was in the last year or two of the Obama administration, they were just setting this in place. They figured it, Hillary would probably finish it and chalk it full of people. But they were taking, there are two groups of people who work in government. There are the, in the executive branch, by government, I mean, most everything is concentrated in the executive branch anyway. There are political appointees and there are civil servants. There are career people. Political appointees come and go. They serve at the pleasure of the president, as they say. And so they work there for 4 years or 8 years or whatever. Then a new administration comes in, and if it's of a different party, actually, whenever a new administration comes in, they're told, you've got to submit your resignation. We invite you to quit. And they do. Now, if it's the same party, then they go, and you can reapply for this job, but we want to make sure that we have all the patronage that we can handle and that we need and whatever. Well, the Obama administration took a whole bunch of political appointees and moved them to the career path. Took a lot of positions and moved them to the career path. That made them fall under civil service protection. It's very difficult to fire somebody with civil service protection. Like firing somebody with tenure. It's a long, arduous process. Most people don't bother. So they just essentially marginalize these people, and you get a whole bunch of parasites in government collecting government pay and then a government pension who aren't expected or aren't even allowed to do anything because they can't or won't. That was the Obama administration's attempt to solidify forever their grip on power, what they had done, make it difficult to undo. What Biden is doing is along those same lines. Now, the next president, whether it's Donald Trump, whether it's anybody who's a Republican, needs to hire somebody, appoint somebody, whatever, who is single-minded, focused, dogged in pursuing these regulations to undo them. It's doable. It will just take a long time and a lot of effort because that's how government works. And then they've got to clean house. They've got to identify all of these people and fire them. And they've got to stick to their guns. They've got to eliminate positions. They've got to do whatever the hell it is to get rid of this rot inside our government. So just keep that in mind. There's a full plate of feces awaiting whoever wins the next presidential election. Okay, I want to play you some on the trans issue, since I was talking about Nex Benedict and suicide and what have you. On Firing Line, there was a psychologist named Jonathan Haidt. I don't know how you'd pronounce it. Hate. It sounds like hate, but it's not. And I'm sure the left will make a big stink about this. But he is on the show talking about the social contagion nature. Now, this will get you banned from MSNBC. This is just this side of a hate crime. You probably get arrested in Scotland for even thinking this. But the social contagion aspect of the trans non-binary garbage. because it's a huge, huge thing, particularly amongst girls. Young girls, when they're friends with each other, they get together. They like one likes one boy, and then everybody kind of likes that boy. And no one like, it's just it's weird. Boys are similar, but not to the same degree on the same things. But what he lays out here, it makes host Margaret Hoover wildly uncomfortable. If you can find the video, it's somewhere in my Twitter feed. But it makes host Margaret Hoover wildly uncomfortable because this is on NPR or PBS. She recognizes that she can't really push. She's not an expert. She's not particularly knowledgeable about most things. So she can't push back against this because she's not equipped. She doesn't have the tools. She doesn't have the data. But she also recognizes that the Hamptons vacation crowd in which she rolls is not going to like this. And so she's kind of stuck. Also, her husband, Jim Avila, I think is how you pronounce it, he's running for Congress up there as a Democrat, surprisingly. So he could catch hell for not standing up and throwing a drink in this guy's face or whatever. You know, there's all sorts of trouble that she could get in. So she's wildly uncomfortable. It's great from that perspective. But what this guy says is wildly interesting and should be of concern to everybody who at least pretends to care about people, particularly children, because there are people advocating for the permanent chemical alteration or surgical alteration of teenagers and pre-teenagers' bodies based on something people who actually practice psychology understand and can point out as folly and dangerous. It's really a damning testament to the profession that they are, by and large, remaining silent or becoming complicit in this because it's trendier. They fear political ramifications. But this psychologist, Jonathan Haidt, is not.
So there's very important older research by Nicholas Christakis and James Fowler, where they looked at they had gigantic health data sets, the Framingham Heart Study, and they were able to see that, you know, if one person takes up smoking, their friends are more likely to take up smoking, but actually so are their friends' friends, and even friends' friends' friends. So the things we do spread out through social network. We affect each other. Now, it turns out when you're looking at emotions, girls and women, when this study women, when a woman is depressed, that spreads out to her network, whereas when a man is depressed, it doesn't. Women talk about their feelings. They're more connected in that way. Girls, you're connecting on social media, where it just turns out in many communities, the more anxious and depressed you are, the more you get support. The more extreme your symptoms, the more you get likes and followers. You know, of course, it's good to destigmatize social mental illness. We don't want people to be ashamed. But boy, is it a terrible idea to valorize it, to tell young people, you know what? The more you have this, the more popular you'll be, the more support you'll get. And so you get this explosion, not just of anxiety. Anxiety is in part, I think, spread sociogenically, it's called, from social causes, not from internal causes. But we get it for dissociative identity disorder, and it seems to be the case for gender dysphoria as well.
And you think that the data demonstrates that it is above and beyond just the phenomenon of coming out and increased awareness? Mm-hmm.
Yes, because it happens in clusters of girls. It happens in clusters of girls who had no previous gender dysphoria when they were young. So it's very different from the kinds of gender dysphoria cases that we've known about for decades. I mean, it is a real thing. But what happened, especially when girls got YouTube and Instagram early, but then especially TikTok, girls just, you know, girls get sucked into these vortices and they take on each other's purported mental illnesses.
Wildly interesting and incredibly important. And it should be the topic of discussion. It should be the topic of research. This, you can see why the UK said, we're not going to do this anymore. There's not enough known about this. But there's a lot of things that we need to study that just don't make any sense. And now this comes along. This makes sense. This makes sense. And no, I am sure that Margaret Hoover is regretting having this person on, and that there are anti-hate organizations that are desperately scrambling to try to find some way to counter this, or at least making it clear to the rest of media that you do not have this person on. You do not entertain this. The way that they did in Canada when they did a documentary about the people who detransitioned. And the left and the pro-transition people said, you can't show this. And they got it banned. They're just going to show a documentary. And no, you cannot have, there's no one's disputing the stories of the people in the documentary. They're telling their own stories. Nobody's disputing it. They're saying, no, the concept is so harmful. Well, how the hell could the concept be harmful? It can't be. It's not. But they'd have you believe it is. Because they don't want anybody to hear contrary opinions. They don't want anybody to hear anything that is unapproved by the state. Now, this story from the UK Daily Mail goes right along with that. The majority of gender-confused children grow out of that feeling by the time they are fully grown adults, according to a long-term study. I'm surprised that somebody published this. Researchers in the Netherlands tracked more than 2,700 children from the age of 11 to their mid-20s, asking them every 3 years of feelings about their gender. Results showed at the start of the research, around 1 in 10 children, 11%, expressed gender non-contentedness to varying degrees. Whatever that means, you can guess. But by age 25, just 1 in 25, 4%, said they often or sometimes were discontent with their gender. Now it just is. It is. The researchers concluded, quote, the results of the current study might help adolescents to realize that it is normal to have some doubts about one's identity and one's gender identity during this age period, and that it is also relatively common. Also, that you grow out of it. It comes amid a massive boom in transgender children receiving drugs to change their gender in the U.S. Can't change your gender. As critics say, doctors and patients are not challenging young people enough. Patrick Brown, a fellow at the Conservative Ethics and Public Policy Center who was not involved in the research, told the Daily Mail, quote, this study provides even more reason to be skeptical towards aggressive steps to facilitate gender transition in children and adolescents. The fact that rates of satisfaction are lower even just a few years later suggests that the vast majority of people, prudence and caution, rather than a rush towards permanent surgeries or hormone therapies, will be the best approach for teenagers struggling to make sense of the world and their place in it. The study is one of the longest into the issue of gender in children, but the researchers point out that it has some limitations. For one, it looked at a mixture of children from the general population and kids who were receiving mental health care, though not specifically for anything related to their gender. Here comes the part where they go, we need to live in this world and we don't want the army of left-wing flying monkeys coming at us. Therefore, it does not necessarily reflect the attitudes of children clinically diagnosed with gender dysphoria. No. But the massive influx of children doing that is the problem. You've had a bunch of reports of children who were prescribed puberty blockers after a 20-minute consultation. Like, hey, no, here, take this. It's like a breath mint on the way out the door of a restaurant. Like, just okay, go ahead, take it. The researchers from the University of Groningen analyzed the data of 2,770 people who were part of tracking the adolescents' individual lives survey. Participants were asked to respond to the statement, quote, I wish to be the opposite sex at six different points over 15 years. They were given multiple choices, zero, not true, one, somewhat or sometimes true, and two, very true or often true. The same prompt was given every 2 to 3 years from the start of the study in March 2001 until the end. The longer people lived, the more people realized that you have some pretty weird thoughts when you're younger. And most of them pass. Most of them pass. Most of them pass pretty quickly. Most of them pass pretty thoroughly. But the beginning of it, the social contagion aspect, is part of the real problem. If you look at, now this is gender dysphoria diagnosis trends from 2018 to 2022 by state. Here in Maryland, it's increased almost 100%, 98%. Why would that be? Because it's trendy. Look, it's the easiest thing to declare. You can't disprove it. And you get special treatment. You get treated specially. You're told you're special. It's wonderful. You get celebrated by leftist teachers. Why wouldn't you do that? In Washington State, it's up 145%. In California, 102%. The only place it looks, let's see, it looks like maybe South Dakota is down 23%, but I think that's probably just a typo because it's based on color coordination. Michigan up 92%. In Indiana, it's up 247%, the claims of gender dysphoria. That is impossible. There's, you know, there's something to be said, what's a statistical anomaly? But this is across the board. This is the problem. Nevada, 75%. Utah, 193%. Texas, 69%. Florida, only 35%. Why? Because in Florida, they don't coddle you. They don't embrace it. They don't go, oh, yay, let's all celebrate. We're going to have a parade just for you. Virginia, it's up 274% in that time period. Does that seem possible to you? I'll save you the time. It's not possible. It's not, the species would not be perpetuated if these numbers were remotely true. Yet we're told they're true. We're told that's how it is. And to question it is some kind of hate crime. And therefore we must have, you know, trans safety zones and you cannot tell parents and don't do anything and keep it all a secret from everybody. What are they afraid of? A little bit of sunlight and they suddenly scatter. A little bit of common sense and they get outraged. A little bit of reality creeps in. A little bit of study, an actual study, rather than just embrace somebody's feelings. And the wheels fall off the cart. That's why you're not allowed to question these things. Because it doesn't hold up to questioning. It doesn't hold up to scrutiny. Just shut up and obey. That's the leftist mantra. I want to shift gears a little bit. Locally here to the state of Maryland, the legislative session is approaching an end. This is a dangerous time in Maryland. It's a dangerous time in any state when a legislative session is coming to an end. Why? Because that's when they start doing stuff. That's when they start scrambling. Oh, the clock is running out. There's a date certain and a time certain here in Maryland when the legislative session ends. And so everybody recognizes they have to scramble and fight like hell to get to that point. Get to that, oh, we got to get this rammed through before then. And you start horse trading, you start cutting deals, and I didn't read this. It doesn't matter. I'll vote for your thing if you vote for mine. And like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. And garbage gets through. Everybody becomes Nancy Pelosi. Well, you have to find out. You have to vote for it and find out what's in it. There's a delegate named Chris Fair. Chris Fair is... I had to look him up. I never heard of him, but he is a member of the State House of Delegates. Wikipedia says, born in 1984, an American politician who was a member of the House of Delegates, District 3 in Frederick County, Maryland. Grew up in Mount Airy, blah, blah, blah. Sworn into the Maryland House of Delegates January 11, 2023. Okay, so he's new in there. And then it says, he is the first openly gay lawmaker from Western Maryland. Who cares? Like, honestly, this is how far left is, and this is how perverted the mind is. Okay, we got the first openly gay delegate from Maryland already. It has to be, because then they wouldn't have to put the subcategory in there. From Western Maryland. And then if they get somebody out there in the super far west of Maryland, okay, the super far west of Maryland. He's the first person of color who's openly gay to be in the House. It just goes on and on and on because they want to put up a shield around people to say, well, you can't criticize this person. Well, I'm sorry, Chris Fair, but you're fair game. Not making a play on your name. I just don't care that you're gay. Congratulations. It's not an accomplishment. But it does kind of tell me and inform me of what you're doing here, because there's a situation in one of his bills he's hoping to get passed in the state Senate, already passed the House, to decriminalize, to make it, you know, to ban making it illegal, is the way it's poorly worded, that the knowingly spreading or attempt to spread the HIV virus. How is that? What? Who supports this? Yeah, there's a cocktail. There are pills you can take that can make sure that HIV doesn't become full-blown AIDS, or at least increase the possibility that HIV not become full-blown AIDS. But it's a damn disaster. It doesn't mean you want it. Would you want your body riddled with benign tumors? Or would you rather not have tumors at all? Nobody wants a malignant tumor, but would you go, all right, well, you can give me 10, 15 good benign tumors. They can go in occasionally and get them out of there. No, you don't want tumors. AIDS is mostly manageable, but not completely. It still kills people. No medicine works for everybody. So the idea, like, oh, man, you can't, just because it stigmatizes. Fair to quote, the HIV criminalization bill has passed the House with bipartisan support. It continues to be a question of whether or not there's will of the Senate to pass it. Okay, great. Because before, it was illegal to know that you have AIDS or HIV and, say, have unprotected sex with somebody. Now they try and say, well, it has to do with, you could be charged if you bit somebody or you spit at somebody. Well, first of all, what the hell are you doing that's an issue? Secondly, you could be charged with all sorts of things for all sorts of reasons. And if you're biting somebody, you should be charged with biting somebody. If you have AIDS, I highly doubt that a progressive prosecutor is going to go, and then we're going to throw the book at you because of that. Doesn't seem to be a way to spread it. It's not the zombie virus in The Walking Dead. So that, if you want to repeal, I'd ask you what your priorities are, and who the hell you're hanging out with. If you want to repeal the law that says if you're HIV positive and you bite somebody, you could be charged with trying to spread it. Fine, I guess, go ahead. And if there's science to back that up, and I believe there is, but to then go the other direction and go, and you know what? We're going to make it. Okay, you can't charge them for anything. Well, that's not biting somebody. There's a big difference between in the heat of the moment, I don't understand it, but you spit at somebody or you try to bite them. And you meet somebody and you decide to have sex with them and they decide to have sex with you. There's a big difference between those two things. If you have HIV, in the heat of the moment, you get pissed off, you do all sorts of stupid things. But and maybe you're drunk or whatever, I don't really care. But at a certain point, if you're out there and you're going, let's do it. And by the way, I'm not going to tell you that I'm HIV positive, and I'm not going to take any precautions. I'm not going to do anything. I'm pretty sure that whoever the person is would want that information. They don't want to know that you bit somebody. They don't want to know that you spit at somebody. If they found that out, then probably your chances of having sex would drop dramatically. But they do want to know if you have a sexually transmitted disease, and that's what AIDS is. If it were anything else, I have penicillin-resistant syphilis, but let's just go do it anyway. You go, wait a second, what was that thing you just said? I want to have some sex, but I don't want to have sex that badly. I'm going to pass on this. Or I'm going to take extra precautions. Whatever it is, it's an informed decision, and it can only be an informed decision if the parties involved are informed. And this bill is an attempt, and they did it in California, they've done it in other places, to make sure that people are not informed. Why? Because they say, well, it's stigmatizes it, unnecessarily stigmatizes it. It could stigmatize people with HIV. Well, it should be a little bit of stigma attached to it. It's a communicable disease, and it doesn't go away. It can be held at bay a lot of times. That's great. Good. Glad we did that. But it's still a communicable disease. You don't want it communicable to you. Therefore, you should be told this. And if somebody knowingly puts your life in danger because they don't want to tell you, even if they, don't worry, I just probably, or at least possibly, gave you an HIV injection. You're going to, I don't know if it'll turn into full-blown AIDS, but don't worry. Now that we've had this hookup, you can spend the rest of your natural life taking pills to try and keep the virus I just possibly gave you at bay. Anybody going to be down? Anybody think that's okay? Anybody think that's cool? Anybody goes, yeah, you know what? We shouldn't criminalize that. No, we should. It should at least be damn well, at a minimum, a serious freaking civil penalty involved in that, where the person who did it has to pay for the drugs for the person they gave it to forever. And then a whole bunch of money on top of it. You can't just go, oh, well, sir, I didn't have to tell you, so I didn't tell you. Oh, that's lovely. And who the hell thinks this is a good idea? What is wrong with Chris Fair? Like, oh, I wouldn't want to stigmatize people. Why not? It's not putting a stamp on their forehead. It's saying, you know you have this. You know how this is spread. You know how you got this. If you're going to engage in the way you got this with somebody else who doesn't have this, you're going to be giving it to them probably. So you should give them the option. Democrats are super pro-choice. Shouldn't you give the people the choice to go, you know what, I don't want to do this with you because the prospect, possibility, or probability of me getting this is far too high. And I don't want to. Well, but you can take pills for the rest of your life and you'll be fine. I don't want to do that. I choose not to have this. It is my choice, is it not? But no, no, no. It's weird that it's a priority for anybody, any human being. You want to take away the penalties or biting somebody or whatever, that's fine. I believe all the evidence shows it can't be spread that way. That's fine. I'd still question, you know, you might want to institute some more severe penalties for biting somebody just in general because who the hell bites people or spitting at people. But you want to, if there's extra added penalties from law from 1989, says the current law passed in 1989 makes it a criminal offense to, quote, knowingly transfer or attempt to transfer the HIV virus, which causes AIDS. It was adopted at a time when there was not much known about how HIV is detected, transmitted, or treated. Since then, treatments have been developed to control HIV. So what? There are treatments out there to control herpes, if your commercials are to be believed. Should you then go, yeah, you know what, I just gave you herpes, but don't worry, you can go take a pill. Take a pill, man. What are you doing? What are you getting all set about? Take a pill. No. What the hell is wrong with people? This is a priority. In Maryland, you got a very small legislative window. There are problems that the state needs to address. They really don't usually address them. But this is, they're going to burn calories on this? Really? Fair says this law is, quote, an incredibly dangerous tool that's done more harm than good. An individual bites somebody and that person that's biting them has HIV, even though there's no possibility of transmitting by scientific standards. People have used this exact code to charge an individual with a crime which potentially can punish them for prison for 3 years and charge them a $2,500 fine for a bite or for spitting at somebody. Okay, I mean, I guess you really got the biting and spitting people vote locked up. But, change that law. You don't have to change it for sex. if it's dubious at best, but science shows that it's not, you can't bite somebody into getting, fine, get rid of that. There's no ambiguity about the sex. Why do you just make it in general? Oh, no, it's no longer a crime to knowingly spread this. Great. Now you've just said it's okay to give people AIDS. You see, that is messed up. I grew up at the time like AIDS is coming to get you. It's coming. It's an equal opportunity offender. It's everywhere. It's going to kill you. It's hiding in your bushes when you leave your house. AIDS is probably going to jump out there. It was replaced by predatory lenders at some point, but there was always this thing coming to get you and look out, and it's equal. It was never an equal opportunity offender. It wasn't. There are certain ways where it is very likely to be transmitted and certain ways where it is very unlikely to be transmitted. And most people do not engage in the ways that it is very likely to be transmitted. But they had to scare the hell out of everybody because they didn't want to stigmatize anybody. And how many people did they actually cause to sort of take a laissez-faire attitude towards it to actually get exposed and die of AIDS? Because they're like, well, if it's going after everybody, there's nothing you can do about it. Blah, 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 blah. No, we wouldn't want to stigmatize this particular community. You mean the community that you could actually protect if you did a little bit of stigmatizing there? You maybe focus the education dollars and where it would do the most good, if you're at all interested in doing good, and therein lies the rub. Are you interested in doing the good? I don't know that they're interested in doing the good. I don't think they're interested in doing the good. Quote, this is what Chris Fair says. People living with HIV have this kind of sword of Damocles hanging over their head. In every single social situation, they have no control over being able to make the right decisions. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. And by the way, if it's a sword of Damocles hanging over their head, but you can take a pill and be fine, then there's no sword of Damocles hanging over your head. So he's admitting that there's still, you know, possibility that it might be 90% pill works. 10% doesn't work. Bit of a problem. But if there's no control over being able to make the right decision is pretty damn obvious. If you're going to go have sex with somebody, tell them. Let them know. And the odds are you're not going to have sex that night if you tell them, if you're honest with them. Look, we're into each other, but I just got to let you know. Because the law requires it, but because it's the right thing to do. What the hell's wrong with you? Why would you? We know what we need to do. We need to destigmatize honest and open communication, and we need to remove all this sort of stop doing the right thing business, or do the right thing business, and just let people live their lives. Great. Legalize being a horribly destructive force. I'm sure. I am positive that even though I don't know anybody who has HIV, and I hope not to, but anybody out there who gets HIV is never going to go, well, at least I had the sex, or, well, that's okay, it's no big deal. I can just take a pill for the rest of my life and be fine. They're going to be pretty devastated. But just because a state delegate goes, well, we've got to make sure that people aren't stigmatized. No, there should be some stigma. We need more judging in society. So much crap and so much that's wrong in society is because there's some liberal going, no, you can't tell anybody that that's wrong. Yes, we can. There's a lot of stuff that's wrong. And we should be speaking up about it and shouldn't be afraid of some leftist tiskness going, who are you to judge? Who am I to judge? I'm somebody who has to deal with the crap here. Okay? I'm somebody who doesn't want other people to get AIDS. There you go. I'm part of the radical fringe that doesn't think that people getting AIDS is no big deal. We'll see if this actually gets rammed through at the last minute, but you just sit there and you go, this is, yes, it's not necessarily a death sentence, but it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. You could take pills for what if you can't afford the pills? Well, then the taxpayer gets to pick up the bill for the pills. Okay, so then we all now have a stake in this so that somebody isn't stigmatized, so that somebody that Chris Fair represents isn't stigmatized by telling somebody they want to have relations with that they have AIDS. we all get a lifetime of paying for somebody's medicine. Is that it? Is that what this bill is? Because the off chance that somebody bites somebody, even though he can't cite anybody who's been charged with biting somebody with AIDS, trying to give, being charged with it, they could face it. Okay, could. Remove that. Done. Problem solved. But I think that maybe facing 3 years and a $2,500 fine for knowingly having relations, which is, you know, it's not transmitted through saliva and biting or spitting, but it is through other things. Doing that knowingly and not telling them, maybe 3 years in prison isn't all that bad of an idea, and a $2,500 fine. Maybe that's the real reason is, people, we don't want to stigmatize people, punish people. You stigmatize people and punish people all the time. That's what government does. They live for it. There are people spending a hell of a lot longer than 3 years in prison because they entered the United States Capitol on January 6th. Which one has more lasting impact on people, on individuals? A lifetime of taking medicine to keep full-blown AIDS at bay? Or the selfie it took in the rotunda? Which one is a bigger problem for people? Which one do you think? I mean, I know what Democrats will say, but they're lying frauds. I just wonder who the constituency is for this when you could remove the penalties for the things that are sort of, you can argue, are involuntary or innocuous. Although I wouldn't argue that biting anybody is innocuous, but you're not spreading AIDS that way. But you are with sex. If you keep that to yourself, you are knowingly putting somebody else's life at risk. You are knowingly, likely, shortening their life. So you could have a few minutes of selfish pleasure because you didn't want to tell them. You didn't want to risk not having those few moments. You don't destigmatize that. We need to restigmatize that. The world would be better off if we did. In the last few minutes we had together, there's a bunch of things I want to get to. This one is just a real indicative sign of the times. Hat tip to Prince. UK Daily Mail story. There must be a radical rethink, quote, they say, of how autism and ADHD are assessed and treated if the National Health Service is to cope with soaring demand for care, a new report says. Doctors are referring five times more patients for autism assessment than in 2019, and while the number of prescribed medications for ADHD is up 51%. 51%. Now, is there something in the drinking water over there? No, these are adults, actually. They're semi-famous people, UK famous, whatever that means. But take that for what it is. Sheridan Smith, 42, has recently revealed that she was diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. 42 years old. What is, you, wouldn't you crave it at that point? Boy, I'd love to just have so much energy and ability to just go crazy. Booming mark. Olivia Atwood, pictured, talking about their ADHD ordeal and waits of up to 10 years for assessment. She's, I don't know, her lips are new, at least the filling in them, in the picture, and so are her breasts, but everything else looks to be in their 50s. What is it? It's not because suddenly people are going, I just never have been able to focus, and boy, howdy, it's now. It's because we have elevated victimhood to the point that people aspire to it. People aspire to it now. I need something. What is innocuous enough that I can claim so then I can say, you know, I've got just a touch of the ADHD. Or I'm on the spectrum. Where? In the, I don't, just somewhere on there. You can't question me on that. Just shut up. What are you, committing hate crime here? I'm on the spectrum. That's it. That's all you need to know. Bow down and clean my shoes. It's bizarre. It's weird that people would aspire to something like that. It's self-destructive as a society, as a culture. You sit there and you go, let's just elevate. You know what we should aspire to? Have you ever thought about maybe having some sort of disorder? That you can't. And the same thing's true with gender dysphoria. Well, it's an easy way to claim it. Let's just claim it. Well, these people are in their 30s or 40s or whatever. They probably got a long string of you know, as they say, body count behind them, so they can't really say, you know, it turns out I'm a dude, or it turns out I'm a chick. Like, wow, you never acted. Leonardo DiCaprio coming, I'm trans, I'm really a woman. I think the 172 25-year-old Victoria's Secret models in your wake would attest to something different, maybe make the case. I was just trying them out because I didn't realize I just wasn't comfortable with any of them. Nah, not going to buy it. But it's, if you're non-binary or whatever, you just declare it to be. If you're younger, you can just declare it to be. You don't have to act on it. You don't have to do anything. You just say, I feel this way. And suddenly you're a member of a protected class. Lastly, I want to play you this clip from Poland. Well, from the European Union. I'm going to butcher this guy's name, but I really like the cut of his jib. He is the European Union member of the European Parliament from Poland. They're trying to pressure Poland. They're always trying to pressure Poland to take in a whole bunch of illegals. And he's having none of it. And he goes up there and he defends Poland beautifully.
The lowest unemployment in European Union is Poland. The highest GDP after COVID in European Union is Poland. One of the lowest debts in European Union is Poland. So don't give us this rubbish about the need of educated immigration, as we heard yesterday. We don't need your doctors. We don't need your engineers. Take them all and pay for them. We don't need them. You know why? Because there is a zero terrorist attacks in Poland. Why? Because there is no illegal migration in Poland. So don't give me this look. Don't give me these arguments about the populism, because this is a fact. This is your data from Eurostat. So we don't need your engineers. We don't need your doctors. Take them. Do not teach us. Do not teach us about democracy, because we know what the democracy is. So learn from Poland. Be like Poland. Thank you very much.
Would you love somebody to defend the United States like that? We're not interested. We're doing just fine. You think these people are a boon to your, take them. You can have them all. And congratulations to you. Any American politician who said anything like that, the left would light the torches and get the pitchforks. All right, I want somebody to do that, man. I want some politician to stand up and just give the double middle finger salute to everybody. And go, you know what? Screw all y'all, pal. Go chase yourselves. Anyway, that's it. Maybe I'll play that dude's speech again in the Week in Effin' Review and give it the rip-roaring retreatment that it is. But I think I've got a good idea of what I'm going to talk about in that anyway. You're not going to want to miss it. Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Appreciate you listening. Hopefully you see you at midnight. Otherwise, have a great weekend.